I fucking hate it. Like a pro, right yeah, there.
That was good.
Thank you.
You should have heard our first one.
Maybe I'll put it in there just for fun.
Just for funsies. Hello, it's Talk Murdy to me.
Did you guys miss us? It's been an extra week.
Actually, I was talking to Jay Casa today.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, well, I gotta waste time out here in the East Valley because I'm gonna go to Melissa's to record. She's like, oh my God, that's so exciting. You know, I got really excited because you guys said there was two. And then I didn't realize that you weren't going to put one out last week. Oh. So I like listened really hurriedly. And then I was like bummed. And I was like, yeah, dude, you got to listen better. No, I'm just kidding. I told her I was super sorry.
Aw. It was nice to do the fun 2 week episode with the talk pop to me.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, we took last week off because I was out of town.
And it actually worked perfect because I have been sick as a dog.
Ugh.
Not COVID. I mean, I don't know, but I mean, I do because I tested.
Yeah.
But I'm still there, guys. So if you hear me, I might be sniffling.
A little bit.
So sorry. I might have to cough a lot. So sorry.
Hari Kari, it's cool.
You guys know that song? Look at Me Now by Chris Brown.
Well, just now, Sarah tried to sing a part of it, which in the song he says ladies love me.
Yeah,
but Sarah remixed it and said ladies love us. It was so serious and I did not know what she was talking about, and she had to pull out the song. It ends up she's a little bit vindicated. It is in there. So
I started to worry it wasn't the right song.
I thought you were just remixing like a catchphrase or something, and I was like, oh, okay, it's happening.
No,
but it was nice.
Yeah, we need this fan on low.
You a little bit warm?
Yeah. All I got right. Jeans on up. Over I can to the left.
I can find it. I just have to, when I flip it, the light's going to turn on and it's going to probably go to like level 3 for the fan. And I know you only like a level 1. So,
yeah.
Guys, it's beginning. It's going to be up to 107 this week.
Yeah.
Summertime.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? It happens every year. This is our third summer on the podcast.
Are you sure?
Maybe not.
I think it's just the second.
Well, we started in July, and then we went, yeah, you're right, it's our second summer.
Mm-hmm.
It's the second summer on the podcast. You guys are pros by now.
Yeah, you know.
You might hear a fan, you might hear some air. What you won't hear is me passing out from sweating to death.
Oh.
We'll stop it before it gets to that point.
Yeah.
But yeah. I was in Texas. I went to Houston for the first time. Super cool spot.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't do as much, like, touristy things or like sightseeing because we really just like hung out the whole time and actually spent time like with my friend and her family. We had like a lot of fun, so that was like a really cool catch up. And then I zipped right up on the mountain to Flagstaff, Arizona for the weekend, and it was frickin' gorgeous.
I know, I saw that you put it was 60 degrees and I was like, that's not fair.
Yeah, it like reaffirmed my want to potentially someday have a place up there to like fully snowbird at the age of 32.
Yeah, you're old.
I'm into it. So yeah, that was a nice family weekend after a nice week of vacay and feeling good.
Good.
Aside from my, you know, almost apparent break-in last night.
Melissa.
We'll tell you guys about that later when we explain what's happening this week. Couple of nice things, though, that I'd like to start with.
Okay.
Number one, first and foremost, probably the most important thing that's going to happen for majority of this year.
We're going on a bachelorette party.
Oh, no. Oh. Kentucky Butter Cake is back at Crumble.
Equally as great.
So, huge shout out to Naomi, who took the time to send us the Crumble story showing that Kentucky Butter Cake was a part of this week's lineup.
Yeah.
Long story short, slash reverse that, I recently found out that Crumble ships opposite flavors, like not just their weekly lineup. They also bring out a few extra flavors. And I had told Sarah, like, I'm really thinking about ordering some because it's Kentucky Butter Cake. It's my favorite. Tried to order some. Order somehow got canceled. They were like, due to, like, delays, we can't send this. We don't have the materials. So sorry. And I was so sad. But then here it is on the regular lineup this week, like an angel from above. And Naomi took the time to send it over. And I think your response was, Melissa's going to lose her shit.
It's true.
And I did. I was so excited, but I felt very, very appreciative that I now have somebody looking out for me as well.
Yeah.
It felt really good.
I'm not enough for you.
Nope. So that was really cool. So guys, seriously, if you're near a Crumble and you want a delicious cookie, swing by, pick up a Kentucky butter cake, tell them Melissa from Talk Murdy sent you. They will look at you like they have no idea what you're talking about and don't give a shit, but just do it.
And then tell them to listen to our podcast.
Yeah. And then drop a sticker with our, not a barcode. What am I trying to say?
QR.
QR code. Yeah. Just do it.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, highlight of the week right there. You also tried it again, the flavor today. Yeah. And it's pretty great, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty delicious.
I'm down for it.
Yep. So that was exciting. And then the other very exciting thing, new review.
Woohoo!
We get so excited about these guys. It's a 5-star review.
I don't really prefer when I woohoo, you look at the camera over there at the screen to see how loud it was.
To see your levels?
Yeah, it's rude. Can't I just show excitement?
Woo.
Nope. At least I'm not like Andy. He's like, hello! Seriously. Andy, I love ya. Come to Talk Pop soon.
He forgets that the microphone amplifies it already.
Yeah. But he's got a great voice.
He does. He's got a voice for radio. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Wait, it's a face for radio. He'll be laughing right now in his car.
But it's also, I think it's a voice, Andy. I'm not going to say that you're, I'm not going to be mean to you like Melissa is.
Well, Andy would be confused if I wasn't. Anyways.
Yeah. Andy didn't call me today. Usually on Tuesdays he calls me to tell me about son of a boy dad.
Oh, maybe he didn't listen.
That's not like him anymore.
Well, this is his last week of school, yeah?
Yeah, he called me last Tuesday to tell me about it, but I ignored it.
Oh.
And then I accidentally did it on my watch, and he was like, Sarah, Sarah. And I was like, what is that? Like, I was moving stuff, and I was like, hold on. And I was like, I'm so sorry. Answered on my watch. And it was just funny. And I was like, don't worry, Andy, in a few years, we'll be on the same schedule, so our marriage will really come to fruition. Yeah. It's going to be great.
Seriously. Can have Rowan officiate the ceremony.
Oh my God.
So I can flirt with him a little bit.
He's married.
Oh, I don't want to know that. How boring.
Sass is it.
No, I'm good.
Okay. You guys don't care about all that.
So anyways, new review, guys. It's a 5-star, which Woo-hoo! Is our favorite.
Yep.
The only kind as far as we're concerned. Subject line, just a single period.
You know.
So good. And that's actually her whole review is, if you know, you know.
Do you know?
And we do know.
But do you?
Seriously. For anybody who doesn't get that or understand why that's now my favorite response of all time in an SMS, listen further back. Just keep going.
Don't go all the way, though.
Yeah. Guys, we've had some pretty exciting jumps and downloads.
We have?
Yeah. I don't think I've mentioned this to you yet.
Well, you haven't been in town.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, we're getting some pretty big download numbers happening, which is pretty exciting compared to like normals and lots of new places listening. I want to say, let me take a peek-see. Actually, I saw the other day our third most downloaded area. It's always been like the States pretty much. Chile, Santiago, coming out of nowhere.
I don't even speak Spanish.
Hola, speak for your solo self.
Remember when I did that, Mark Kilroy. I had to listen to myself butcher all those Hispanic names.
Yeah.
It wasn't good for me. And I live here.
We should be better. But yeah, I was like looking through. I'm like, oh, let me look at like all time locations. And I was like, what the heck? Like Chile just came roaring up there. So seriously, if you're listening from Chile, hola. We love to have you here.
Oh my God.
Big fan of your country.
With that being said, this week, did you have anything more?
Nope, that was it.
What's happening today is, I have a long story.
Yeah.
Me, Sarah. So we're going to go solo. It worked out that way because Melissa, like she mentioned earlier, had a frightening thing happen last night.
Yeah, wasn't
cool. Take it away, Melissa.
So last night, I'm sitting on my couch in the living room working on the podcast, and I have a security sent, like I have a security alarm like normal, but I also have like security lights that are motion activated. And I have one on my carport and one by my front door. The one on the carport goes off semi-regularly.
Because she has like 18 cats.
There's cats that live outside of my house. They set it off as they come and go.
5 of them.
Totally normal. But the one by my door is really only goes off when you're walking up to the door. And my mom is probably 5'7", 5'8". She's too short to even set it off. So like,
is she really that tall?
Yeah, she's probably 5'7". Maybe 5'6".
Because I think I'm a good chunk taller than her.
Yeah, fine. She's tiny.
Yeah.
So, but she's not like short by any means. She's just, but she can't set the light off. She has to like wave her hands or like open the screen door. So the one by the door went off and I have a small window in my front door and I was like, well, that's unusual. But, you know, occasionally if the cat is like walking on the fence, you know, it sets it off, whatever. I wait like 10 seconds and I decide, you know, I'm just going to look through the window. I'm just going to see what's going on just to make myself feel better. Normally I don't, but I look through and the window has like this design in it, so you can't see perfectly clear. I see a man walking away from my door out the front gate and he only has basketball shorts on, like no shirt. I don't see his face. I couldn't see because it was like,
yeah,
I think I was mostly shocked that I, you know, when you think you're going to see something, you kind of start getting yourself going like, oh, I'm going to turn around and there's going to be a ghost. Like, you know, you start expecting to see something, but then you actually see it and you're like, what? I feel like was kind of what happened. So he was on his way walking out, but it was just such a weird thing. Cause it was after midnight. There was like absolutely no reason for anybody to be coming up to my door. He didn't knock. It's not like someone needed help. And it just gave me the creeps immediately. And then I kind of went into my front office where it has a bigger window that looks out the front and like stood there like for 10 minutes, like looking through my little blinds and things like, is there they coming back? Because the security light stays on for like 5 minutes or something.
Well, and it was midnight.
Yeah, it was after midnight. It was one of those things that just immediately gave me the heebies. And so I tell Sarah, I call her today, like, hey, I didn't actually get as much research done as I wanted to. And I tell her what happened and she goes, so you just stayed up all night? You just like didn't sleep? I was like, no, I immediately like checked my alarm and went to sleep immediately. It was like my body was like, nope, don't deal with it. Just go to bed. Don't think about it. I don't know. It gave me the weird feeling and I didn't like it. So I, long story short, didn't get as much done as I would have liked to for the story. So since Sarah's is so long today, we're doing a solo Sarah day.
That is fun.
Yeah.
A solo Sarah day.
It's all about you, girl.
Wow. Okay. I wish it was Saturday so we could say a solo Sarah Saturday.
Okay. Well.
But it's not. All right. I'm going to take off my shoes.
Great.
You got to start reminding me.
Okay. What shoes do you have on today? Oh, sandals.
Yeah.
I just don't know who you are now that you don't wear your orthotics anymore.
Whoops. Sorry. Listen. I don't need my orthotics. I thought I did. I thought the orthotics needed me.
They did need you, but you don't need them.
Exactly. My feet don't hurt anymore. I've been wearing orthotics since I was skinny and like 17 years old. The same orthotics, and I'm now 32 and pounds upon pounds heavier. And I don't think it was right for my feet.
Yeah.
So.
Good for you.
I am a heavy walker. I am. You're not?
I don't know what that means.
That I walk heavy.
No, I understand what those words mean, but I guess I wouldn't think of it because you don't live in like a two-story house, so I've never heard you walk like above me.
Never. Oh, you could just hear it on here.
Okay.
Okay. All right. I'm going to take you somewhere.
Where?
Somewhere you and I have been together.
Chipotle.
No. Fat. It's a place, Melissa.
Oh.
I mean, Chipotle is a place. Do you want to guess anymore?
It's where we've been together?
Yep.
Is it in the U.S.?
Yes.
New Orleans?
No.
Waco.
Excuse me. Waco. I'm actually going to tell you about the 1982 Lake Waco, aka Waco, murders.
What?
Yeah. I saw it and I read it Waco.
Okay. Still.
For those of you who don't know, Melissa and I's first like trip together, like becoming friends, just her and I, we decided we were going to go to Texas. We went for like a whole week.
It was one of your spring breaks.
Yeah, it was a wonderful road trip. And it was real late, and we were getting into Waco, and I saw the picture of the bridge we were on, and I'm like, oh, Melissa, look, like Waco, and she lost her shit, and because it's Waco, and we were going to Waco, and I knew that, and
Sarah just doesn't, she never learned phonics, so you'll say things sometimes, and it sounds like you're joking, but you're serious, and it's just so wonderful. Granted, I also was like, oh, that's nice. They have a highway named Rosa Parks Highway. And it said like Lake Mary Boulevard or something. It was nothing close to Rosa Parks. And I was like, oh, no. So it wasn't just you, but
this was me. This was bad.
Now we call Waco Waco.
Yeah. All right, so 1982.
Also, go me for picking that on my second try. That's pretty good. We've been on some good trips, dude.
Please don't dude me.
Okay, bruh.
No.
All right, Cap.
What's that? What's Cap?
Captain?
No. No.
Buddy?
No. You know, bud? I don't really like it.
Bud?
Hey, bud? No, thank you. All right, so.
Okay, pal.
Put it here. Okay. Ladies love us.
You guys,
we haven't been together since the last time you heard us together.
Yeah, for real.
No, for real, for real.
Yeah, Sarah walked
No cap.
No captain. Sarah got up, walked out of my house, didn't plug my fridge back in, and I haven't seen her in weeks.
That's your fault. Okay. On July 13th, 1982, two men were going fishing as the sun was going down at Lake Waco in, now this is going to be, there's some weird names, okay. Per use. Spiegelville Park. S-P-E-E-G-L-E-V-I-L-L-E.
Yeah.
Spiegelville, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you believe it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, the lake's big, so there's little parks around it.
Got it.
And as these two fishermen were kind of trying to find a place to fish, they kind of saw out of the corner of their eye under some branches a body. And at first they said, oh, what everybody thinks. Oh, it was a mannequin.
Yeah.
Oh, this must be some sort of prank. Oh, somebody passed out while drinking earlier and different things like that. But yeah. As they got closer to kind of investigate if the person needed help, they realized that it was actually the body of a teenage boy. He was propped up against a tree. He had been gagged. His hands were tied behind his back. And it was as if the murderer had put his sunglasses back on him.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Obviously, they quickly call 911. A million people show up. 1982, there's not a lot going on around in Waco. So the police started investigating and they quickly came to terms or quickly found out that this teenage boy was a boy named Kenneth. And Kenneth had actually been reported missing earlier that day by his father.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Sergeant Truman Simmons was one of the first, I don't know if he was a police officer or a deputy. Texas has a lot of different law enforcement.
Yeah.
But he was basically the first on the scene. I actually read this whole Texas Monthly website that basically gave us a viewpoint from Sergeant Simmons' eyes, which is going to be a lot of what I'm telling you about. And he actually was leaving his wife's work because he had the night shift. So he would go and visit her when she was at work before because their jobs didn't coincide. So he drove over to Spiegelville?
I just am picturing you calling it Schmiegelsville, because isn't that like our Lord of the Ring thing? Like a Schmiegel something?
I didn't watch that.
Okay.
Okay.
Me either.
So, apparently. So, he drove over there and he was one of the first sergeants on the scene. And what he said is he noticed that nobody had really taken authority over it.
Oh.
There was a bunch of officers and deputies and people there. But everybody was kind of just like extremely wide-eyed and shocked about what they had found.
Yeah.
So he quickly took over. He started telling people to look over the crime scene. He said for everybody to spread out, to start searching the area. And minutes after they all kind of went their separate ways searching, they heard a cry and it was about 75 feet away. Yeah. So they ran over and where they heard the cry come from, Sergeant Simmons heard... Sergeant Simmons saw laying in the grass was a young blonde teenage girl.
Oh my gosh.
She was found naked. She had her bra tied around her right leg. She had been stabbed many times. She too was gagged with her hands tied behind her back, just like Kenneth was. And I didn't mention, but he had also been stabbed repeatedly.
Oh my God.
Now, as the investigators looked around, they also spotted another body near it, and there was a bent knee kind of peeking out of the high weeds that they had found the first girl in, and this was Unfortunately, the body of another girl, she had brown hair. She too was naked, stabbed, gagged, with her hands behind her back. The one difference was that her throat had actually been cut.
Oh my.
I will mention this, although they must have heard that cry, the young girl did not survive.
Oh.
There actually was like nothing for sure saying like that they heard the cry or if she had just passed. I couldn't really find that, but I do know there were no survivors.
Oh, God.
Investigators soon identified the victims as Raylene Rice, Jill Montgomery. Those both girls were only 17 years old. And then Kenneth Franks, who was 18. Jill, Raylene, and Kenneth had been stabbed a total of 48 times. They were bound with either shoelaces or strips from a towel. The stab wounds were shallow, which made investigators believe that they most likely had been tortured while being killed. And this was at nighttime. Like I said, the fishermen found them at the evening time. So by morning, after reading about the murders in the newspaper, citizens of, I almost said Waco.
I heard that happening. I saw that happening.
The citizens of Waco were sent into a sheer panic. They obviously started becoming more and more cautious of what they were doing. They were locking their doors. They even asked for curfews to be put in place for kids and anybody, really.
Yeah.
And the investigation of these murders was assigned to the Waco Police Department under a man named Lieutenant Marvin Horton. Jeez. So although Sergeant Simmons had taken the reins, it was passed on to the correct, quote unquote, correct person.
I mean, think about just how small of a town Waco was when we went in like 2019 or 20, something like that.
I think it was like 2017. Melissa. Okay.
But like it seemed like such a small town because it's like basically like Baylor University and then small businesses is how it felt.
Very
much. To imagine it 40 years earlier, like that must have been an even tinier town.
You're true.
A lot of cows.
They would have known more if people knew about Torchy's Tacos. One's opening up by my house, so get ready. If you guys have never been there, you need to go there.
If you have been there, please let us know what else you like there other than that green chile queso.
That queso was hot fire. Okay. Not just fire, hot fire. All right. So Lieutenant Horton headed up a team of 7 officers who focused on special investigations, obviously the murders. And they received many tips called in by citizens saying that there was like a gang in the area called the Scorpions, and men from the Scorpions had been bragging that they were responsible for the murders. Other tips called in included somebody saying that they actually gave a ride to a nervous man who had blood on his pants, that they had picked him up near the highway close to where the bodies had found, but they had no idea because it wasn't until the next day. One more tip said that somebody had been doing Native American rituals and there was a devil's cult in the area. So nothing solid.
A lot of conjecture.
Exactly. Now, when investigators had found Jill, who I believe, hold on, let me double check.
17.
She was 17, but I believe she's the brown-haired girl. I was trying to remember. When they found her, they actually saw that she still had her high school ring on. And she was from... Now, this is an interesting name. The name is... Wakachichi. W-A-X-A-C-H-A-C-H-I-E. Wachachichi? Okay. Well, from Wachachichi or whatever, if you know, send me a video of how to say it.
Mm-hmm.
High school. And that City W, we'll call it. Was about...
You hated that.
Was about an hour north of Waco.
Okay.
So investigators learned that the girls live there. They had driven down to Waco to pick up Jill's paycheck. She had like worked at some sort of museum or something in the summer, and they wanted to get her last check. And then after picking up her check, they went to a local grocery store so they could cash in the check. And then they went to Kenneth's house. Now, Kenneth lived in Waco, and he and Jill had actually gone to school together and had dated for a short time.
Oh.
And this all happened. It was very interesting. Apparently, they met and dated because they both lived in a place called the Methodist Home, which was in Waco, and it was for troubled and academically challenged youth.
Hmm.
So it sounded like maybe they had some issues and their parents sent them there, almost like a boarding school type of thing. I don't know. Although their dating life didn't really work, they remained friends, and that's how they knew each other.
Okay.
Kenneth's dad, who had reported him missing, told investigators that the teens were at their house and that he said goodbye to them as they were leaving to go to Coheen Park, which was across the lake from the Spiegelville Park. And apparently that park was known for teens to go hang out, smoke, drink, kind of party.
Hmm.
But this is kind of where investigators don't know what happened after, because Kenneth's dad was like, yeah, the girl showed up. This is what they did. They told me where they were going. I knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
And then he never came home.
Oof.
Yeah. So they had witnesses who had been at the park, said they saw the group kind of show up. They saw that Raylene's car had been there. They actually found her car there, but nobody had seen them leave the area anytime. And investigators were trying to figure out, if they didn't have Raylene's car, how did they get across the lake?
Right.
And there was no evidence of, like, a boat. There was no tire tracks to the gate to Spiegelville Park, which closes at 11. And anybody they found heard no, like, sounds. No screams, no arguments, nothing. Now, where the bodies had all been found, investigators could see that grass had been flattened out, either showing where the teens had been sitting, or they also thought where they might have struggled when being attacked. They also found some cans of Bud Light, but there was no fingerprints on them. There was no knife found. There was actually hardly no blood. And then because the girls were naked, they believed that they most likely had been sexually assaulted, and they didn't find any type of, like, DNA that way, or any semen, or anything like that. So basically, nothing.
That just seems crazy, because those are, like, I mean, you're still a kid, but when you're 17, but for him to be 18, like, that's almost a grown man. I don't know what he looks like, but to take three young adults for whoever committed this crime, like, for Kenneth and
do you know who it is?
No, I just mean if it's, I mean, you think it's one bad guy, but it almost seems like maybe it was multiple bad guys, because how do you, you know, unless, I don't know, that just seems crazy. Like, that makes me sad.
Well, unfortunately, medical examiners did confirm that both girls had been sexually assaulted. And overall in this investigation, 150 to 200 people were interviewed. And pretty much there was nothing that came of it. There was no motives. It basically hit dead ends. They would come up with these little tips and then nothing.
Right.
Now, Sergeant Simmons, the first man who arrived, he was not working on this case. He was not part of that special, because I'm pretty sure he was a deputy or a sergeant. And then they were the police, the Waco police. So, although he wasn't on the case, he actually dedicated most of his free time to help solve this case. And he truly felt that the teens had actually been killed somewhere else and brought to Spiegelville Park.
How weird.
Because there was no DNA.
Right.
There was no blood. Like, if somebody's being stabbed,
there should
three
be more.
People were stabbed up to 48 times, there should be some sort of blood evidence.
Yeah.
And he kind of learned, through working and volunteering his time, that there were a few suspects, but no real leads. One of this local tough guy named Terry Lee Harper was brought in for questioning. He had, like, quite a record of assaults, but was let go. There was also apparently some hairs that they did find on the girls, and they kind of used that to also set, what is that called? They tested them and they didn't match.
Oh, I see. To find like what blood type maybe this person was.
They just didn't match Terry Lee Harper. Okay. So he was kind of, that was their only real suspect. And following this, the case was labeled inactive. Oof. And I read that story and it actually said that Sergeant Simmons was like walking past the table that held like all the folders and he saw that they labeled it and he was like, why is this inactive?
Yeah.
Like, hold on. Yeah. Like, no. And he actually looked at it and he knew he couldn't let it stay inactive. So he called to his higher ups and convinced him to take over the case.
Ooh.
And apparently he didn't get along with everybody. And it sounded like a lot of people didn't understand why he was so obsessed with this.
Yeah.
But I can tell you why. It's because he was the first person on the thing. And then I read this terrible thing that said that when he found the bodies of the girls, he whispered in both of their ears that I will find your killer and made the same promise to Kenneth as well. So I think he was just very much connected to it. But I do know that that led for some difficulties between him and his bosses.
Yeah.
So they did let him take over the case. And the next day he pulled all his reports. He got started. He had a small little team working with him. He looked through all the leads that the other officers had found, knowing that many of them were dead because not the people weren't dead, but the leads were dead.
Dead ends.
Thank you. But then he quickly found a tip from a girl who was 17. So the same age as the girls. Her name was Lisa Cater, and she had actually gone to school with Kenneth and Jill at that Methodist home.
Oh.
And Lisa hadn't told Lisa had told investigators about this man named Munir Deeb, and he was a 23-year-old man. He had kind of a limp. He went by the nickname Lucky, and he actually ran the Rainbow Drive-In, which was a convenience store across from the Methodist home. So basically like similar to maybe a 7-Eleven type of thing.
Something that would have given him proximity and a reason to know two of the victims.
Exactly. And apparently Deeb and Kenneth did not get along very well. Mm. Kenneth, like I said, he was at this school for children with difficulties and academic difficulties. Apparently, Kenneth would actually go into Deeb's store and make some like racial jokes about how he owned a convenience store, and it caused a lot of problems. And it said that Deeb would get so angry at just the mention of Kenneth's name, he would just like, people could physically tell that he was angry about him.
Oh.
So it like very much escalated. So Sergeant Simmons and his partner went to go talk to Deeb, and they learned that they learned of the tension between the two because of the racial slurs.
Got it.
And what they also learned was that Deeb had actually hired a girl from the school to work at his convenience store, and her name was Gail Kelly. And Gail was pretty close with Kenneth, and as she worked for Deeb, he kind of developed a little crush on her. So he also didn't like that Kenneth was close to the girl that he had a crush on.
Okay.
Do you get it?
I'm getting it. I'm seeing it. It's winding.
Exactly. Witnesses also came forward saying that after hearing of Kenneth's death, Deeb laughed and said he was happy that he was dead. And, Sergeant Simmons was like, well, we got what we could out of him.
Yeah.
We can't arrest him. We can't take him in for questioning. We have nothing. So we're going to go interview Gail Kelly. So the girl who he hired to work there. And she was not just friends with Kenneth, but also Jill as well. They'd gone to school together. And Sergeant Simmons listens to Gail answer all his questions. And as he's looking at her, he kind of said he just thought of something and realized that she looked extremely like Jill.
Yeah.
Like almost identical. Same hairstyle, brown hair, same height, same figure.
Yeah.
And he like stopped her mid-sentence and said something like, did people ever get you and Jill confused? And she was like, oh, all the time. They thought we were sisters.
Right.
So he started thinking, okay, well, that's kind of interesting that they have so much likeness.
Yeah.
And later that night, around 1 a.m., Sergeant Simmons was woken up by a phone call from Gail, and she just started yelling, he did it, he did it, he did it. And once Gail was calmed down, she tells Sergeant Simmons that She and her friend had gone to a movie with Deeb that night. Uh-huh. So that same, the man who owned the convenience store. And after the movie, he told the girls he had killed Kenneth, Jill, and Raylene. But then when Gail and her friend seem very shocked, he's like, oh, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. And
weird
Gail
joke.
Was like, yeah, I don't think he was kidding. So Sergeant Simmons called his chief to tell him what he had learned, told him that Deeb needed to be arrested because Gail had also told him that he was planning to leave the state because his store was being foreclosed on. Just a lot of weird stuff. And Sergeant Simmons' chief wasn't sure. He said there wasn't enough evidence, but finally, once again, Simmons convinced him because they thought Deeb would be a flight risk.
Okay.
Now, Deeb was arrested. He was brought in for questioning. He continued to say he was innocent. He had nothing to do with the murders. It was just a coincidence that he didn't like Kenneth and blah, blah, blah. And like you, Sergeant Simmons started to wonder, could he have done this himself? And he honestly didn't think he could. He said, you know, he kind of mentioned that with the limp that he had and different things like that, he just didn't believe that Deeb could have murdered all three of the teens.
Will you call me Sergeant from now on?
No.
Okay, I had to try.
And he realized, again, kind of mid-interrogation, oh, I need to talk to Gail again. I need to ask her, who are Deeb's friends? Who does he hang out with? Was there anybody else that you would have found suspicious? And Gail actually mentioned this biker who was nicknamed Chili, but his real name was David. And then...
why don't we have nicknames?
We do, remember?
Yeah, but those are our, like, you know, like our handles. But, like, nobody calls us Tiny... well, everyone does call you Red.
No, nobody does, except in my family.
I was going to say, like, my dad likes to call you Red.
Yeah, he's the only one.
That is nice.
No.
I'm just saying, Lucky, Chili.
I think it's because we're not part of a biker gang.
So you and think it's actually get best called best?
A biker club.
Yeah. So we should get another... we should start a club.
I'm getting a Harley.
Oh, my God.
You could get...
I'd get a Vespa.
Yeah, because...
because I'd look cute. But still be able to, you know, like, get groceries.
Oh, you can get groceries on a Harley.
Yeah, but...
You don't know.
They're so loud.
Actually, I cannot deal with any more non-muffled cars.
Really?
Yeah. You know how loud it is in Phoenix?
Dude, I know. Sheriff Lamb has been really... there's a sheriff one county over, guys, who's been putting out videos of him pulling over cars on two-lane highways that are just driving in the left lane, not passing. And he's doing this campaign of, like, don't camp in the left lane. And I'm like, yes, this is what we need in law enforcement. Like, these are the little changes that are going to stop road rage. It's going to make things safer. Like, I'm all about it. So maybe you should bring up the lack of mufflers.
Yeah.
To your local sheriff's office.
Arpaio.
I'm he's just not kidding. The sheriff.
Is he even alive?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, Chili, a.k.a. David.
Got it.
Now, Sergeant Simmons goes back in. He continues to interrogate?
Yeah.
Deeb. And he's like, hey, do you know somebody named Chili? And he said that Deeb said he knew Chili. He had spent some time in the convenience store with him, but that was pretty much all he said about him. And Sergeant Simmons decided to take a break from questioning Deeb and let another officer kind of take over. You know how they do that? The swippy swappy?
Yeah.
So this was pretty smart because the other officer had actually told Deeb how he knew Chili as well, a.k.a. David. And the guy's name was David Spence. Mm-hmm. Chili was David Spence.
Got it.
Okay. And David Spence had just been arrested along with another man named Gilbert Melendez because they had cut a teenage boy on the leg and forced him to perform oral sex on Melendez. So he was like, oh, you know them? And then a teenage boy and then Ken, you know, and then there was the sexual assault. So they kind of started, Sergeant Simmons and his group kind of started piecing things together, theories. They still needed to find a lot out, but they just had all these little thoughts floating through their brains.
Yeah.
And
a web, if you will.
Exactly, a web. Thank you. And Sergeant Simmons' first stop was that he was going to go speak with Nancy Shaw. And Nancy Shaw was Jill's mom. And then he also spoke with her aunt as well. And Sergeant Simmons really felt that Jill was the primary target in the murders, and that Raylene and Kenneth were just in the bad place at the wrong time. And the reason why he started thinking that was the likeness between Gail and Jill.
Okay.
And as he's kind of doing this insurance, it gets kind of weird, and he insurance is the next word coming up. But as he's investigating, he learned something weird about Deeb's insurance. And he actually learned that Deeb had taken accident insurance out on Gail Kelly, the girl who he worked for, 2 weeks before her murder. Or, I'm sorry, 2 weeks before the murder.
Right. Of Jill.
Of Jill.
Who looked like Gail.
Yes.
Okay.
And in the paperwork, he wrote that he was Gail's common law husband.
Oh, that's weird.
And that the policy would pay out $20,000 if she was to be killed.
Which is probably closer to like 50 grand or 100 grand in today money.
Yeah. So then that starts putting more of those webs together of Jill was the primary person.
Right.
Was Jill mistaken for Gail?
Right. Because if so, that smells like motive.
That's what Sergeant Simmons was saying. Sergeant.
Call me Sergeant Tiny.
No, I will not do that. That is too much. All right. Just like you said, it points to motive, especially financial motive, especially because they also thought that he might be leaving because his business was being foreclosed on and the wheels start turning.
Got it.
Okay. Now, Deeb never confessed, though. Like, even when they started talking to him about it, he was like, no, no. And instead, his family hired a lawyer. They pushed for polygraph tests. And after 3 hours of the testing, the operator delivered his opinion, which was that Deeb was not lying and had nothing to do with the murders.
Interesting.
Exactly. But again, this didn't stop Sergeant Simmons from believing his theories, believing that Deeb had to have something to do with these murders.
Yeah. And just to recap, Deeb is 23 years old at the time.
Yeah, and he owns the convenience store.
That seems kind of crazy. Like, what a goal for somebody who's so young. It's impressive.
Yeah. I think it'd be pretty cool to own a convenience store.
I think so,
like,
too.
Like, think of all the snack things that you get to go, like, learn and read about and buy.
Yeah, Dunkaroos galore.
Yeah.
A Slurpee machine. Do you think people can hear me putting my hair up right now?
I'm wondering.
I mean, we'll find out at some point. We'll see when I edit, because either people will be hearing this conversation, or they'll hear me pop into this plane and go, "Hey guys, sorry to jump in right here."
So fucking creepy.
Quick insert.
23 owns the convenience store.
Oh, I thought we were going to keep talking about snacks.
Oh yeah, Slurpees.
So, could you imagine having a Slurpee machine, Richie Rich style?
I haven't had a Coke Slurpee in so long.
You know, number one, you can get probably the best Coke Icy I've had in a really long time came from the AMC movie theater. So delish.
Mm.
So, you know, I'm normally a Harkins girl, but AMC has a great Slurpee. And also, I'm excited to go back to Michigan because I'm pretty sure it's frozen Coke season at the McDonald's out there.
I'm so mad we don't have those here.
I don't understand it. And the only reason I think that is because A, it's the summer, and that's when I saw it there last year. And B, I saw a billboard for like frozen orange juice or something at McDonald's.
We don't want that here.
No, we don't. We want a frozen freaking Coke.
Yeah. I'll kill ya. I'm just kidding.
Ronald, if you're listening, do your thing.
I had to call Melissa yesterday because I started watching season one of Hard Knocks on HBO, which is a TV show that goes behind, or a documentary style TV show that goes behind the scenes in NFL locker rooms and practice squads. And they're starting with the Cardinals this year. So I was like, you know what? My Aunt Lisa, so wonderful, put me on the HBO Max thing. I'm going to go watch it. And I had to call Melissa to tell her about a conversation that two of the Dallas Cowboys superstars were having about people dressing up in haunted, like, houses and how you just...
And mascots.
Somebody's going to kill you, and it was pretty funny.
it just made me so happy because season one followed the Dallas Cowboys, which is my team. And then this next season, they're following the Cardinals, which is Sarah's team. And when she's telling me about this, I can like see it happening in my mind. And I told her, I can't wait for you to semi kind of be more of a fan of the Cowboys because you're going to get to like see the guys and like see them as people and not just a team that's not yours. And your response was, you know, it's already happening and I don't really want to talk about it yet. You just can't help it.
But that's me. Like, my origin story with football and the Cardinals was I watched the Amazon same style documentary thing on them and just like fell in love with Bruce Arians and everybody. And so whatever. But we're not into Ronald McDonald without the frozen Cokes.
Yeah, seriously. Get it together. Do something about it.
100%.
Also, open back up those Ronald McDonald homes for donations of tin and things so we can support local families. Thank you so much.
Exactly. Our family loves the Ronald McDonald House.
We do.
We're big supporters.
For a few years in a row for Sarah's mom's birthday, she asked us as a family to help prepare and serve a meal at the Ronald McDonald's House in Phoenix. And it was so much fun. And then they stopped because of COVID, but I wonder if maybe they're back open again.
We should look it up.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
All right, I'm moving my legs. I'm sniffling.
You're existing.
Woo!
Oh, ladies have us. That's going to be the title of today's episode. And people are going to see it and go, huh?
Gross. Okay. All right. Now, where were we? Financial motive.
Got it.
Lie detector test. Sergeant Simmons still believed that Deeb had something to do with the murders.
Yeah.
Oh. This is where it gets a little bit crazy.
I love when you tell yourself your own story.
Sergeant Simmons was like, I believe in what I believe, and I must take the next step. Mm. I'm going to go work in the jail.
Wow.
And he's like, why would I want to work in the jail? Well, that man, David Spence, a.k.a. Chili, was in the jail for that other count of sexual assault. Mm-hmm. So he's like, if Deeb won't let us in and he had really not much to do with it, let's go to the next person.
Wow.
Yeah. So he gives up his spot of the sergeant on his sheriff's to go work as a deputy in the sheriff's department in the jail.
That feels selfless.
Yeah.
And commitment.
He very quickly became friends with David Spence.
A.K.A. Chili.
But now we're just going to call him Spence.
Okay.
Spence was not really aware that his name had come up in the investigation for the Waco Lake murders. But even then he was like, I'd love to help you try to solve them.
Sure.
Because that's the type of guy Spence was.
Right.
And
psychopath.
100%.
Got it.
So Spence quickly told Simmons that he had been working at Burke's Aluminum, which was actually right next door to the convenience store. And Deeb's convenience store.
Yeah.
And Spence's girlfriend, Christine, actually worked at the convenience store. So he's just telling him more stuff about how they're connected without even knowing.
Seriously.
And so because of that, when Spence would get off work, he would just go hang out with Christine at the convenience store, play video games, hang out. So Spence was like, hey, Sergeant Simmons, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to ask my girlfriend, Christine, to go around on the block and see if she's heard anything about the murders. So Sergeant Simmons, that sentence was in the wrong spot. basically, Sergeant Simmons would just give Spence extra time on the phone to talk to Christine, to try to hope that he hears something and basically form this very tight bond with him. They actually had like regular nightly conversations when he was on the job.
Whoa.
And I started telling you the story from my brain and I lost the spot.
That's okay.
Okay. But Okay. So what did I say?
That Sergeant Simmons was basically giving him extra phone time to speak with his girlfriend to help find out what would go on.
Sadly, Christine came with no information.
Damn it, Christine.
I know, but they still had their little nightly conversations, like I was saying. But within weeks, Simmons ended up telling Spence, hey, your name was brought up in the investigation I was in prior. I just want to let you know. Spence was like, well, I had nothing to do with the murders other than that I know Deeb and that's all. I don't know who those kids are. And Simmons kind of was like, okay, but there's just too many things that are... Listen, he wasn't trusting anybody. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he continued to talk to him nightly. Even if Simmons wasn't on duty, Spence would call him to talk to him. Like, they really became, like, he needed a co-person. What is that?
Codependent.
Codependent. Yep. That's... Thank you for having all the words for me today.
Anytime. Sergeant Tiny. Oh, wait, no.
No, that's you.
Sergeant Red. No, you're just Red.
No. Now... Finally, months later in January, Simmons was approached by another inmate, and this inmate's name was Kevin McKell. And he said Spence had actually been going around bragging about how he murdered the teens. Oh. So Simmons was like, well, we've been talking for months, and he's always said he had nothing to do with it. And right. Now he's going out, and he's telling people he did. And what...
He would lie to me?
How dare him? We talk nightly over the phone. And what Kevin McKell told Simmons was that Spence had talked about how Kenneth's hands had been tied with shoelaces, mm-hmm. how Raylene had her bra just wrapped around her leg. And he also mentioned that there was another person involved, and that person's name was Gilbert Melendez. Now, Gilbert Melendez is the man that he's actually in jail already with on that assault charge.
Co-conspirator.
Thank you. That was the word I was looking for. And as Simmons kind of digs in more, learning and talking to more inmates instead of just focusing on Spence, he learns that Spence was sharing things to all the inmates about how he was in a satanic cult, how he had been paid to kill the teens, but then they were the wrong teens.
Oh my God.
And that somebody named Lucky had paid him to kill them because the girl had dishonored him. Now remember, Deeb's nickname was
Lucky.
Yes.
And he was angry about the girl he had a crush on.
Gail.
Who
looked just like
Jill.
Oh. Imagine trying to write this at nighttime.
Dude, imagine Sergeant Simmons being like, oh my God, what I thought happened happened.
Yeah,
like,
it's everything
actually happening.
It basically sounded like all outlandish thoughts he had. He heard. Do you need to take a break?
Maybe just...
Melissa's having a hard time.
I'm sorry.
Don't take this out, though, because it's important, even though Melissa's moving around in the back. No, okay. Pause this so you can move.
Okay, guys, sorry for that. I think I started to move just a teeny bit and then thought, oh, that's all I need. But it's almost like when you start itching a mosquito bite and you think, I'm just going to scratch it for a second. And then you just can't stop yourself from going and doing more. I think that was me moving around just now. So
it was aggressive.
Sorry.
All right. Everything he thought somehow was piecing together. Yeah. That's what we were at. So Simmons was like, well, I now have some information, like firsthand account of what had happened.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and take this to the new Waco. I always want to say Waco. Waco district attorney. And I'm going to tell them what I heard, tell them about my investigation. But he was very quickly shut down. They're like, we're sorry. This is hearsay. We cannot do anything about it. So, once again, Sergeant Simmons does not give up, and he knew that Spence had to be his key into solving this case. So, he also didn't give up on his relationship. He continued working at the prison, or at the jail, technically. And he was just like, all right. So, like I said, Spence had become so attached to his relationship with Spence that he was calling him at nighttime. And Spence also was going through some stuff because Christine was breaking up with him.
Oh.
Yeah. And he actually went so, it said, berserk that they actually had to give him medication to calm himself down when Christine actually broke up with him. And some weird stuff happened. Like, he started wondering if he had split personalities and just, like, if Chili was a different person than Spence was. And, like, just, like, but it was very much, like, this person obviously had a drug problem. This person obviously didn't have like good mental stability. So all these things that are saying are kind of iffy.
Yeah.
Now, in early March, that new DA made an announcement that he was going to be creating a new task force to put together new eyes to look into the Lake Waco murders. So remember when Simmons gave up his spot as the sergeant, he gave up his task force.
Right.
So now he's just doing stuff on the side and working as a jailer.
Yeah. Okay. And then when he leaves, he does his second shift lighting the gas lamps on the way home.
A jailer. What's wrong with me? Okay. So, like I said, Simmons had a lot of people looking at him sideways. They thought, what in the world is this man doing? Giving up his job, going to work at the jail to try to solve these murders. Like, he wasn't looked at as like, wow, this person doesn't give up. He was kind of looked at as, this person may need some help. Like there's
obsessed.
There's too much attachment. But he was actually asked to be on this task force. They came to him and said, hey, we're bringing back some of the people you already worked with for them to kind of give the new people all the information. We'd like you to join. Even though we all don't see eye to eye, we'd like you to stay. And you can stay working as a jailer. Okay? So, now Simmons decided, I already know Spence more than enough. I'm going to go to Gilbert Melendez, the other gentleman. Now, Gilbert Melendez had finally been sentenced to 7 years after he pled guilty to that aggravated sexual assault case. And like Simmons did with Spence, he focused on asking him questions, saying, do you know who these people are? And Melendez was like, nope, I have nothing to do with this murder. I don't know. All I know is what I read.
Yeah.
And Simmons continued to put pressure on him, telling him, you know, Spence is going to start saying things. He's been telling me, basically kind of lying.
Yeah.
And later that same day that he kind of put the pressure on Melendez, Melendez went to talk to Sergeant Simmons and he simply said, I was there. And if I confess, will I avoid the death penalty?
Oh, shit.
Yeah. And Simmons was like, yeah, if you confess, I can make sure you don't get the death penalty.
Yeah.
And Melendez was like, okay, I'll testify against Spence. Yeah. So Simmons, being the sergeant that he is, grabbed his tape recorder that he had handy the time. He set it out. And this is what Melendez told him. He said that he and Spence had been driving around in Spence's car. They had been drinking. They had been smoking. They went to that Coheen Park where the teenagers were. Mm-hmm. They saw several teenagers, including the three. Spence started talking to Kenneth and Jill and Raylene. He enticed them into the car, telling them that he had beer and weed. And after he did that, Spence raped and stabbed Jill, then did the same to Raylene, and then killed Kenneth last. So he's saying
it wasn't me.
He killed all three of them. Yeah. I didn't do it. But then he also says, but we drove the bodies to Spiegelville and left them and then just went home. So that's why they think there was no evidence over there.
Right.
Now, Simmons was like, yes, I finally did it. This is so great. And he calls his team. He tells them, and one of the team members who, obviously they were used to Simmons getting excited and like jumping to the conclusion that everything was solved, was like, well, what about, what kind of car did Spence have? What kind of car did Melendez say he had?
Yeah.
He was like, oh, he said it was a station wagon. Well, the investigators already found out that Spence didn't get the station wagon until 2 weeks after the murders. Oh. So there was now a gap in what happened. Now, Melendez was actually taken out of the jail and taken to the two parks, hoping to like jog memory to bring up stuff or hoping that they could find evidence.
Yeah.
And every day he kind of went, he gave different statements. And at first everybody was like, well, you know, he's abused drugs and alcohol, so this could be the problem. He also had said multiple times he had nothing to do with the rapes and murders. So they started to become suspicious of his true story. And Melendez was given a polygraph test, actually two of them, and it actually confirmed that he was involved in the murders. And he was then sent to prison for his 7-year sentence.
Interesting.
And he recanted what he said.
Right.
Again, they still don't have enough evidence to arrest anybody, to do anything. This is all hearsay.
Well, and for him to be serving the sentence for sexual, like aggravated mm-hmm. sexual assault, and then for his story to be like, I was there and he did everything and I yeah. did nothing. It's like, I don't think that's the whole truth.
Exactly. Now, it had been about a year since the murders, a little bit less, April of 1983, and the investigation was still stuck in the same place. Like I said, everything was hearsay. There was nothing they could do. But then a new assistant DA named Ned Butler came up on the docket. I don't know if that's what you say, but... And he actually stopped by to see Sergeant Simmons, and he said something weird. He said, "We'll be able to know soon enough if your theory about Spence is true." And Simmons was like, how do you know? Yeah. Like, you just got here. Well, Ned Butler had actually used the study of bite marks to forensic odontology.
Odontology.
Thank you. To solve a murder in Albuquerque just 2 years prior. So he actually was looking at the reports for the Lake Waco murders and believed that some of the spots on the girls looked like bite marks.
Interesting.
So he actually went to Albuquerque back to that same forensic bite mark guy. And he was like, can you please look at these? And within days, the forensic
odontologist,
yes, named Homer Campbell said, oh yeah, these were Spence's bite marks, because he had also gotten molds of Spence's teeth.
Interesting.
Yeah. So now Simmons and his team finally had some sort of like solid evidence to prove that Spence was involved. They found more witnesses who reported weird comments from Spence that said the summer before he had thought he killed somebody and he thought he raped two girls, but he didn't know. Which kind of went back to the fact where he thinks he has a split personality.
Yeah.
It was so, so weird. And I already told you. The other thing investigators found out was that there was another suspect with them as well. Tony Melendez. Oh. Gilbert's younger brother.
Ugh, Tony.
Now, Tony was actually wanted in Corpus Christi on a robbery and rape charge. And he actually was questioned... he was questioned when he was being questioned about his rape and robbery,
yeah.
about his brother's involvement in the murders. And he told investigators that he had been in Bryan, Texas, painting apartments. But then later more inmates came forward and were like, no, he said he was at the murders too.
Right.
So it all kind of, people are snitching.
Yeah.
You know?
Itching to snitch it.
Seriously. Guys, I'm getting there. I know it's crazy, but there's a lot of information. Okay. Now, finally, on November 21st, mm-hmm. 1983, a grand jury indicted Deeb, Spence, both of the Melendez brothers, for the murders of Kenneth, Jill, and Raylene.
Whoa, Deeb's coming out of nowhere. Yeah. I mean, it seems like it was pointing away from him, kind of. Mm-hmm. But what's weird is the whole thing about the people who said a guy named Lucky.
Yeah.
Because that all makes a lot of sense.
Well, and the fact that he was mad about Gail. Gail looked like Jill.
Exactly.
So in the spring of 1984, after tons of pretrial hearings, a judge finally decided that Spence would be tried first, then Gilbert and Tony Melendez, and last Deeb. Mm. And each of them would be charged with 3 counts of capital murder, and their first trial would all start with Jill's murder, because that's who they believed was the main target.
Yeah.
Spence's lawyers tried to convince the judge that Spence was railroaded due to the constant interrogation that he went through, aka his friendship with Simmons. And they also tried to say that the bite mark evidence was admissible because...
Inadmissible.
Oh, yeah. Was inadmissible. But all of these types of things were basically denied. They're like, nope, he's going...
Right.
He's going to be on trial for this. They continued to argue. They sent a 33-page letter to the FBI and the U.S. attorney saying that Spence was innocent, but it was ignored. And then they got kind of hit with a weird thing when 6 days before the trial, Tony Melendez, the younger of the Melendez brothers, pleaded guilty to the charges in exchange for a life sentence. So he straight up said, the last Melendez brother.
Yeah.
Yep, I did it. I don't want the death penalty, so yeah. I'm going to do it, and I'll testify. Yeah. In a written confession, Tony stated that he participated with Spence and his brother in raping and killing the teenagers. And Spence's trial began on June 18th, 1984. The state's case based on the theory that Deeb had actually hired the three others to kill Gail Kelly for the insurance money he had on her. But they mistakenly killed Jill instead, then were forced, quote unquote, to kill Kenneth and Raylene so that they wouldn't talk. The state's case was completely circumstantial, to be honest, because the bite mark expert was the only person, their only real evidence
like that they had. Like forensic-wise.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that man, the odontologist, mm-hmm. he took the stand. He basically said that Spence was the, quote, only an individual who could have bitten the women. So he was pretty like, nope, this is who I think it is. Yeah. This is 100% it.
It's a big statement.
Exactly. And the trial lasted just over 2 weeks. And in less than 2 hours, jurors found Spence guilty.
Whoa.
And a day later, he was sentenced. He was given the death penalty.
Whoa.
Now, remember, this is just Jill's murder.
Yeah.
So after Spence's trial, Gilbert Melendez contacted the court and he wanted to make a deal. He was the next person up to go to court. And he wrote a 16-page confession pleading guilty for two of the life sentences and agreed to testify against Deeb in his trial. Mm. And then he wouldn't get the death penalty as well. Deeb's trial, which was the last one because then Tony had already confessed, began in February. It lasted 12 days. They brought in 40 witnesses. And after 2 hours, he also was found guilty and given the death penalty.
Damn.
Now, next up was Spence's trial for Kenneth's murder. And that started in October. And the state called Tony Melendez, who gave a much more detailed testimony about what had happened that night. Again, just to shorten this up, Spence was found guilty, given the death penalty for Kenneth's murder as well.
Jeez.
Uh-huh. Finally, after all of the work Simmons had put in and his other team members, they finally had solved these horrible murders and put the four men responsible behind bars. So all four were behind bars.
Jeez.
But, not a but yet. 2 years later, Simmons was now, like, very known as, like, the man who solved the case, and nobody thought he was crazy anymore. Right. He actually won the Texas Police Officer of the Year Award. But he had one thing he knew he needed to do to close the chapter on this whole year, multiple year long thing. And Jill's father actually owned a granite company and he would make headstones. But when his daughter was killed, he was too devastated to make one for his own daughter. So Simmons actually, with help of Jill's mom, designed a tombstone, had it made, and had it installed for Jill's family.
Oh.
And it had a picture on it and a poem. And it was just really nice because without that, she had just been...
an unmarked grave.
Well, it was marked, but it wasn't right. Like... didn't have these beautiful tombstones like other people did.
Not as formal.
Yeah. Now, Spence and Deeb both maintained their innocence throughout their jail time. They both went for appeals. And in 1991, Deeb was actually granted an appeal. And the court ruled a testimony of an inmate that should not have been allowed in his initial trial. And because of that, in 1993, Deeb went for his appeal. He won his new trial and was released from prison.
What?
Yeah. Like, lawyers, investigators were just like, but he's the person that set it all up. Like, right. He might have not killed anybody, but...
hey, he's just as responsible if that's true.
Exactly. Spence's appeals were never successful. And in April of 1997, he was executed. His last meal was fried chicken, French fries, tea, coffee, chocolate ice cream, and a Coca-Cola. Now, there is a lot of talk now and then on whether or not Spence should have been put to death because there was not real forensic right. evidence. And in 2017, his sons actually filed a lawsuit against him, or against the state of Texas, claiming that their father and the three other men were innocent. And there was like so much on that that I couldn't, it was 10 o'clock and yeah. I was like, I can't get into this. Basically, I was never able to see if anything has come of it. That's only been about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Also,
how old was Spence when all this happened? Like he had children?
I don't know how old he was.
Right.
Because they talked about the other D being 23 and the kids being teens, but I yeah. never found out about what age they were. But from that one podcast, you know that people can get pregnant while their spouses are in jail.
Yeah, I know.
Basically the families of all of the men believe that their testimonies and statements were coerced, especially from Simmons. A lot of people believe that he convinced these men to do all these things so that he could get the case closed. I don't know.
That seems like a pretty big leap.
Yeah. They just kind of also brought along that apparently from what they found out, there's a lot of evidence that was found, but not like brought to anybody's attention, nor was tested. And with technology now, could it prove their innocence? They're all dead. Okay. So,
it'd just be like clearing their names if yeah. anything like that happened. Mm-hmm.
I think Gilbert Melendez was the last to be alive. And I think he passed away in like 2016 or 17.
Wow.
So, but that is the story of the murders at Lake Waco.
I just think it'd be so odd for the Melendez brothers to confess if they weren't, if they weren't a part yeah. of it. Because there was no evidence. Like, literally, the only reason this went to trial mm-hmm. was because they got someone to break yeah. down and testify.
Gilbert was already gone for 7 years.
Yeah.
Why would he do this if he wasn't going to, you know? So, this is, like, one of the most popular photos. I hate to say that. Most yeah. well-known photos. From officers bringing up the body bags from the lake.
Aww.
This is Munir Deeb in the suit.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. These are the Melendez brothers. That sounds weird because aren't those the murderers too?
The Menendez brothers.
Menendez.
Yeah. Wow.
Tony Gilbert.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And this was Kenneth.
Aww.
And this was Jill and Raylene.
Jeez.
And here's David Spence.
He looks
He has empty. Anger in his eyes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's my story. Lots of twists and turns.
That's a big story.
Thanks for keeping up.
When you told me it was 10 pages, I was like, what? I was thinking serial killer. Like, that's a hearty story, but that's a lot of twists and turns.
Yeah.
You did a good job keeping that organized.
Melissa said, whoa, Summer Sarah is totally different. I was like, I didn't want to do it. It just, once it started, I couldn't stop.
Yeah, I think I said you weren't playing around or something. Yeah, that's that's tough.
Yeah.
It's always, I mean, anytime the death penalty is brought in, it's like, I personally am somebody who, I think that there are certain crimes that is an appropriate tool
mm-hmm.
or decision. But I do think it needs to be like without a doubt.
I was just about to say that. Yeah. This, by the end, I was like, I mean, do I think these people should have been in for life sentence if this is what the jury believe? But like
right.
to put them to death without having concrete forensic evidence is yeah. a little bit difficult. Like they never found blood.
Right. Or like the crime scene.
They never found a knife.
If they knew his car. If he still had that station wagon and that's where it was committed.
Well, they said the station wagon was bought 2 weeks after.
Right, exactly.
Exactly. So the other car maybe was the one that had the blood in it. But then again, you're telling me that David Spence all by himself could kill three people that yeah. quickly? No, he would have to have 2 to 3 other people to hold the other people while yeah. he's committing the murders.
Yeah. it doesn't seem as neat and tidy as you would hope to, yeah. to find out that the death penalty was involved.
100%.
Ooh, excellent work.
Thank you.
I,
air five.
Boop, boop. Good work, Red.
Please don't.
Oh, you know what I just realized is you do have a nickname. I call you Sassy. That's a pretty great street name. Sarah, me. A.K.A. Sassy.
Yeah, you're the only person, though.
Mm, it works.
It's more of a sass.
Yeah, most of the time.
That's why me and Lil Sass together. Just kidding.
Guys, what are your summer break plans going to be?
Yeah.
Because so many of you guys have, like, little ones or kids that I feel like are out of school now for the summer. Like, what are your plans? Are you guys going to road trip somewhere?
Send us your trips.
Yeah. Send us where you're going. Yeah, or like,
send us your itinerary.
Send us the address of where you're going.
What Airbnb? Have you seen all these Airbnbs getting broken into and we're going on a bachelorette party? What? You haven't seen all this stuff?
No.
It's usually in Nashville.
Oh, that's not cool.
All these, I saw this thing. I watched this whole entire TikTok thread about it. This girl and her, like, I think like 10 other girls got to Nashville. They went to their Airbnb or Vrbo, maybe. Yeah. And they just automatically did not feel safe.
Yeah.
They could not figure out how to lock any of the doors. Ooh. And the person, like, wouldn't respond to them. And they decided just at, like, literally 1 a.m., the girl was like, oh, we never unpacked.
Yeah.
We just weren't. They, like, got to a hotel, but no hotels had openings because it was just crazy busy. Yeah. And they said wherever hotel they went to, the concierge were just, like, so nice. When they told them what happened, all of the girls and the guys at the concierge were calling other places to try to find them, even just one or two rooms here, one or two rooms there. And basically this group of girls were just, like, fighting Vrbo to be like, oh, because when they went to go look it up, it was all gone. Like, the place that they stayed was, like, not on there. It didn't even show that it had been filled. Oh. It was, like, disappeared from the website.
That is sketch.
They couldn't lock any doors from the outside or the inside.
Oh, no.
And then I just watched this other one, and I believe it was also in Nashville, where girls came home, and this girl ran in really quick to go use the restroom before everybody else, and she could hear footsteps upstairs. And there was a person in their home breaking in. They stole, single thing. And a lot of people are saying that people are setting these things up because you can get insurance money.
Yeah, and I was going to say Airbnb insurance is, like, a new thing.
Yeah, so let's hope that doesn't happen to us.
That's freaking scary. You can't be too careful. We got – I'm not laughing because it's funny – it is a little funny now. When I was in college, I was on the basketball team. We had a trip to North Dakota, or maybe South Dakota.
A Dakota.
And we had a locker room. And when you go to, like, these away games, like, they give you your own locker room. Mm-hmm. It locks, like, all the things are fine. So you leave your things because you're traveling. And for us, it was our Christmas trip. So we had been in the Midwest and we were all going home for Christmas after. So we all had cash, like, on us that we would take with us. And you don't leave that in the hotel room, you know, whatever. So we go to this game. We come in at halftime and we're like, what is that smell? It smelled like someone was smoking in the locker room. Come to find out, like, halfway through halftime, girls are looking in their backpacks and they're like, my money's gone. We got freaking robbed in the basketball game. And it was just like, what? Like, it was the perfect crime.
Yeah.
It was kind of crazy. But maybe like 3 weeks ago now, I was at my house for everybody who kind of follows along. I'm in the process of selling a house and I'm not occupying it currently, so it's empty. And anytime there's been a showing, I go over after and I just mop, I clean up, I make sure it looks nice for the next people, whatever. Well, I go in the house and basically the house is one big room in the bottom. It's all open concept. And I just walk in, I mop, I do my thing. As I'm going to leave, I think to myself, oh, I didn't look in the garage. And I'm like, Melissa, why are you doing that? But something inside of me said, just do it. I go and open the garage door, which maybe it'll make more sense knowing this, but my garage and my front door are on different streets. So if I pull up to the house and go in the front door, you can't see the garage. So I go and I open the garage door.
It's open.
The whole garage is open. wide open. My garage door was unlocked to the house. So I'm like, had I driven away, my house would have literally just been wide open for anybody. So I was like, what? And again, it's one of those things of you think you're going to see something and then you do see what you were thinking worst case scenario is, like a man walking away from your door in the middle of the night or your garage door open. And I was just like, what the hell? So I drive around and I basically like shut the garage and I look around and I waited for somebody to like come out of their house because other houses are facing mine. And this guy is on a, like a roller, like electric scooter thing with his kid and his other kids on another one. And I like basically flag him down and I'm like, hi, do you kind of come up around here all the time? He's like, yeah, we ride up here every day. And I'm like, did you by chance see this open for a few days or is this a one-time thing? And he's like, oh no, it wasn't open yesterday. Like, oh, I know that for sure. So it just happened to be that showing that day. But Mary, my realtor, was like, okay, we'll walk through the house. Like, make sure every window is locked. Make sure all the other doors are locked. Because what people
Mary, do... why are you trying to send my cousin in there to get murdered?
Well, I was on the phone, but...
What? Exactly. You don't have anybody with you. You could still get murdered on the phone, Melissa.
Yeah, that's why I didn't go outside last night. But it was just one of those things that she said that. She goes, yeah, a lot of times people go to showings.
Yeah.
And while they're in there, they just unlock a window or they like leave something behind and they make an excuse to come back. And it's like...
Ransack you.
Scary as hell.
Yeah. So just be careful on your trips.
Yeah, guys.
With that being said. And get out Andy's song, Melissa.
All right, I'm on it. Thanks for talking Murdy with us, guys.
See you next week.
Oh, here come the horns.